The coalition came to government vowing to strip $500 million in subsidies from the car industry. It wants greater transparency and accountability in how the existing car makers, Holden, Ford and Toyota, operate. Ahead of the last weekend's election, ABC's Vote Compass tossed up some interesting findings on the issue of car manufacturing and this whole question of subsidies. 20% of all respondents wanted more support for the car industry. 43% wanted less. The incoming government will still fork out plenty of your money to car makers, $1 billion in 2015, another $1 billion from 2016. That's providing Holden and Toyota remain in place. Ford has already said it will quit Australia in 2016. Cricket writer Gideon Haigh has switched from cricket to cars for a moment to examine the local auto industry in a new book called The End of the Road, published by Penguin. He joins us now from our Melbourne studios. Gideon Haigh, good morning.
Good morning. I hate to think of myself as a cricket writer.
Well,
really.
I do have to ask you.
A business writer, fundamentally. I mean, when that's where my career started 30 years ago. I've written plenty of books about business.
And, I guess so, but you've written 18 books about cricket.
Yeah, that's right, and all of them worth your while. I'd like to think.
Well, we've spoken to you many times on the program about cricket. What I never knew was that you knew anything about cars.
Well, actually, this must be one of the first books written about the car industry by a non-driver. But that also means that I don't have any particular ideological axe to grind. This book was a question of my sort of educating myself on the car industry. I knew there was a story here, and I wanted to find it out rather than assuming that I knew the story and working backwards from my own conclusions, which I think a lot of writers on the industry already do.
And your book is called The End of the Road, which sounds a little ominous. So let's start there. Ominous. Where is the Australian car industry in 2013? And are we headed to the end of the road for car making in Australia?
Well, the problem for the local manufacturers isn't primarily one of cost or efficiency. It's twofold. First, we've got a market here that's, you know, deliriously fragmented because the barriers to entry are so low. On sale here, there are about 60 brands of car and about 360 models, more than the US, more than China and Japan. So nobody sells very much of anything. You know, 50 years ago when Holden bought out the EH, they sold 156,000 in the first year. Now, even a fashionable car in Australia won't sell a fraction of that. The most popular SUV on the market sells fewer than 20,000. It's very hard to make money on production runs so short, especially when cars are comparatively cheap too. In real terms, the cost of a car has come down by about a third in the last decade. Now, the way the industry's coped in recent history has been by exporting, which, you know, not so long ago it was quite successful. As recently as 2007-08, we exported almost $6 billion worth of cars and components. That's more than wool and wheat put together. But that was around the time that the currency began to appreciate on account of the health of the non-value-added part of the economy. And at times since we've been above parity with the US dollar and quantitative easing has pushed the yen down. So the industry in that time has sort of gone from, I guess, reasonably secure to marginal. And the people who are trying to make business cases for various projects have turned to the state. Now, that's not ridiculous or outrageous. You know, we all look to the state at various times to ease burdens, individuals as well as industries. There's $115 billion worth of concessions and deductions in the tax code. You know, the rugged individualists of the mining industry claim billions of dollars of rebate on diesel fuel every year. So there's plenty of corporate welfare around where not nearly so many jobs are at stake. The current stream employs still 50,000 people.
And that's the nub of this argument. And this is a very heated debate, and it will, I think, always be a heated debate, because we are talking, you know, what to average years sounds like very big sums of money. Mm. But it goes to the future of the car industry, which we know will always rest with subsidies. Mm. There will always be subsidies. As you say, turning to the state is not unreasonable. But on the issue of subsidy, you write there is, quote, an impression of money flowing through the industry like water through a bucket with a very big hole.
Well, I noticed you using similar words, fork out, subsidy, handout. These are very emotive terms. In comparison with the state support for car industries in other countries, in terms of tariffs and non-tariff barriers and co-investment and tax reliefs and incentives, Australia actually doesn't do a lot. And the other thing is that when you cease to make cars, it's not like you're ceasing to make biros or pipe cleaners. Cars are a core manufacturing industry. If you can make cars, you can do lots and lots of other things in terms of handling materials and designing processes. 19 members of the G20 make cars. It was the automotive industry that first assimilated the principles of lean manufacturing, minimal variation, minimal inventory, which are now ubiquitous. In fact, one of the most enthusiastic proponents of an indigenous car-making capacity I interviewed wasn't from the car industry at all, but the mining industry. A man called Sam Walsh, who now runs Rio Tinto. But before that, he was for 20 years at Holden and Nissan, and he told me every lesson he's applying now to driving Rio Tinto's costs down, he derives from his years in the car industry, which is very, very good at saving money because it's not been a hugely profitable industry for quite some time. You know, you offer it in Australia, especially, you're operating at low volumes, fluctuating capacities at paper-thin margins.
And it's not just it's good at, you know, getting more efficiency into the production line. It's seen as a critical manufacturing base for many industries. The research and development that go with a cutting-edge car industry, that has spin-offs for manufacturing. Mm. And it's not just the component companies that flow off our car industry either. And that's the argument often for maintaining and subsidising a government and car industry. In all the research you did, how valid is that argument? In your view?
Well, look, what impressed me most, I think, were the people who worked in the industry. I guess, you know, I expected people who to meet people who are a bit demoralised, you know, a bit negative, a bit fearful, but they're not. You know, the average length of a career at Toyota is 12 years. At Holden, it's 17 years.
Yeah, that's phenomenal, isn't it? I mean, that says something about the culture within the industry.
That's right.
Think.
You know, these are the true believers, you know, in their company, in their product, in their industry, and in work, you know, good work, interesting, varied, challenging work, the work around which you can build livelihoods, families, homes. Ditto people I met in the components industry. Very smart, very focused, very dedicated. I mean, to survive at all in manufacturing these days, with the dollar at these levels, you have to be very good at what you do. Anyway, I'm bound to say the way that people spoke about their jobs resonated with me personally. The problem, I guess, for them is that they work in a kind of an intellectually unfashionable domain. They're not making cool apps or funky threads. They're making cars, and that sounds to a lot of people like, you know, old-fashioned metal bashing.
But is part of the problem? But is part of the problem they're making cars? But what we've been confronted with in the last 8 years, and as you document in the book, it's been a really quite rapid decline in the number of cars rolling off the production lines. That we're making, it turns out, the wrong cars, the cars the world doesn't want to buy. We're not making the small, nifty, fuel-efficient ones, and we're not making the high-end ones or the SUVs particularly. I mean, of course, we do make some. But
well, like I was saying before, you know, the most popular SUV sells 17,000 in Australia. No one sells very much of anything. That's the problem. You know, the actual cars that we do make do reasonably well in competitive terms, head-to-head with other models, but no one sells very much of anything. And I guess the other issue for the industry is that they don't have a lot of political traction these days. You know, the car industry has turned from a sort of a symbol of Australian maturation to a mixed economy, into a whetstone for ideological axes.
But isn't there clearly
something... And a punching bag for political commentators who want to prove their dry credentials.
But isn't there clearly something wrong, given the number of cars being consumed around the world and driven around the world is growing phenomenally, and look at the car market in China, and yet our exports are dropping? Well, so we're doing something wrong there, aren't we?
A lot of that is to do with the dollar, and that's got nothing to do with the car industry. That's got to do with the non-value-added component of the economy. The dollar's not going to remain at these levels indefinitely. In fact, you know, the chances are that we've seen the peak of the mining boom. It's now plateauing and perhaps tailing off. And what's going to be left of Australian industry at the end of that?
What about the cost base? Because that's also cited frequently, that it just costs too much to produce a single car, you know, every single car in Australia. Holden has now offered a pay cut to its employees. There's wage freezes, voluntary pay cuts. I mean, is this the future for the Australian car industry?
Well, it's not simply a matter of the cost of labour. There are all sorts of other exogenous variables that are beyond the car industry to control. And if you were serious about this, you wouldn't simply make it into an argument about the cost of Australian labour. I think the average wage in the car industry is about $55,000-$60,000. And that doesn't actually sound a lot to me. Maybe it is compared to freelance journalism, but if you're telling me you're saying that the people who work for those sort of sums of money are too expensive, then I think you've got to look at how you think about the economy, whether you think it exists for the benefit of the people or whether it exists for the upholding of your pet ideological obsession, whether you think that work is simply an economic activity or a social and cultural activity.
Okay.
Too.
Can I just ask you finally, because there will be an ongoing political debate, because we know the Coalition is planning to take off the table $500 million of subsidies that Labor has there for the future, and there will always be this. Public opinion will factor into it. You say in the book, opinion polls consistently show strong levels of support across all political persuasions for the state helping to keep the car industry going. But I note that in the recent Vote Compass that the ABC ran during the election, a million people participated, but it showed that 43% of those who answered that wanted less support for the car industry, only 20% wanted more support.
It depends completely on the way in which you couch the question. If the question was couched in a different way, if you said that the car industry provides dignified labour and a decent standard of living to 50,000 people in an era in which advanced industrial economies are plagued by the pathology of long-term structural employment. I noticed in your news you're saying that we're unemployment at the highest level in 4 years. I don't think you do away with something like that lightly.
Gideon Haig, you've made a great fist of this. Thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
Okay. No worries, friend. Not bad for a cricket writer.
Not bad. Gideon Haig, End of the Road, is published as a Penguin special. And he doesn't like the term cricket writer. I got that. But he has written 18 cricket books.